You are listening to the New World Order, episode 24 of season 13, for day 301 of 2019. Hey everybody, this is Klaatu. Still kind of recovering from all of the travel that I've done. And by recovering, I mean just sort of getting everything back in order. Your schedule just shifts so much when you're away from your usual routine, or at least that's what I'm finding, and getting back into the normal schedule of the day job and the normal schedule of just real life takes a while. It kind of takes time to get back into it. So in the interest of helping myself get my schedule back on track, I'm going to keep this episode a little bit shorter than I would probably prefer. And let's start with some listener feedback. So this is listener feedback from David on Mastodon. He says, I switched to Ubuntu 8.04 from Windows Vista and tried my best to get things done. I was doing PHP websites at the time. I started with Wubi, W-U-B-I, but eventually just installed Ubuntu. It was a big learning curve, but I'm grateful for making the change because I wasn't happy being locked into the Windows system. And that is in reference to 1338, at which point I had said, I really like hearing Linux origin stories. And I encourage you, dear listener, to send your Linux origin story to me via email or Mastodon or any system that is most convenient to you. I'm Klaatu in many places. I'm not Klaatu in other places. You can generally kind of get a sense for whether it's me or not based on whether I'm talking about Linux. That's all Klaatu talks about online is Linux. Sometimes RPGs, but I try to focus mostly on Linux. So certainly on open source topics. So send me your Linux origin story. I'd love to hear it and talk about it on the show. And David, his origin story here is right around the time that my origin story would have started, because Ubuntu 8.04, I feel like that's sort of in the time frame that I would have been starting out with Linux. I feel like Ubuntu 8.04 would have been something about, well, I mean, obviously 2008, Hardy Heron. So that's actually a little bit later than me, because I remember the Hardy Heron desktop image, the wallpaper image, it was like one of those sort of, not game changers, but sort of a really bold, new-ish look for Ubuntu, and that it was quite cool. It was quite startling, or not startling, but go look at it. Trust me, it was new and exciting at the time. It like was kind of a big deal, and it's kind of funny, I guess, that the way that I'm remembering Hardy Heron is the desktop image, because that's not frequently what you think of when you think of that stuff. Although I don't know, Fedora 7 actually around the same time had a pretty recognizable kind of looking desktop image as well. So I think my first Ubuntu release, or the first one that I remember trying, was 6.04 maybe, if that was one of them, or 6.06, I'm not sure. Something like that, I think. I don't think it would have been earlier than that necessarily. And that was a great time to start with Linux, I think, because you did it. You had some exciting new stuff happening with Ubuntu, and you had Mandrake still kind of going strong. And even Fedora was relatively young at the time. So there were a lot of things that were kind of new and fresh at that moment, at that time, for a couple of years, and then it sort of drew out, got longer and sort of longer in the tooth, and things kind of settled in. I think that was a fun time to jump into Linux. And it's funny to hear that David jumped in from Vista. I mean, that is when Windows Vista came out, people were saying very clearly that people were, that this was a great jump off point out of Windows. Like, if you were trying to get out of Windows, Vista was a great excuse to do that. And I know a lot of people used it as an excuse to do that. Clearly not as many people as, I guess, competitors would have liked. For instance, I think that Apple really stepped up their sort of, hey, come try a Mac now campaign with Vista. And I feel like Linux did what it could, come try Linux now. But, you know, people settle for what they settle. Now, Whoopi is an interesting artifact of history as well. I guess it's still technically being maintained by someone. It's been forked on GitHub. If you go to github.com/hakuna-m, that's HAKUNA-M, and just look for the Whoopi UEFI repo in there, you'll find a modern version of Whoopi. I never understood what Whoopi was because I never really used Windows for anything other than testing some code, some Python code once. I don't really understand. I don't understand the process. I don't have the context, I don't think, to understand exactly how Whoopi works. But apparently it's like a Windows installer for Ubuntu, and it installs the Ubuntu image somewhere, and the where is the thing that continues to confound me. Don't quite understand where this is happening. Is it getting in? Is it a separate partition? Is it like some sort of disk image within the drive, like as a file, and then you boot into that disk that image by way of the Windows boot manager, whatever that may be called. Is there a boot manager for Windows as such? I mean, there must be some kind of boot manager for Windows, I guess. So I don't understand it. If you have a really clear explanation of how it works, I'd be interested in hearing it, but understand that I lack any kind of context. So it is definitely not something that I will necessarily understand without very, very clear explanation. I do not underestimate, please, my lack of context for anything having to do with Windows. Okay, so that's Whoopi. It's some kind of Windows installer, so you would download the Ubuntu disk, and on it there would be a Whoopi.exe. And I guess you wouldn't even have to burn the image, I guess. You could just literally click on that Whoopi as the one that you're running on right now. You would just install Ubuntu. And then I guess you would reboot and boot into Ubuntu, I guess. I don't know. Again, here's where my knowledge kind of falls flat. My point, I guess, is that Whoopi.exe was a thing, and it's not anymore. And I don't know what that says about either users, or maybe Ubuntu's expectations of users, or maybe just Ubuntu's focus point. I'm not sure. I don't know if it says anything. It may just be an artifact of history that just kind of the novelty and usefulness of it eventually wore off, I'm not sure. But it is interesting that it's not a default inclusion anymore, whereas it used to be. Okay, next listener feedback is from Tim. And Tim says, listening to your description of rename, I thought I'd add a few thoughts. Since I use this, and then he puts a little asterisk, command quite regularly. Now the asterisk he has here says, sure to check, since there are several binaries called rename out there, each doing some sort of similar functionality. So I'm not sure which one you're running. That, Tim, is rather clear, actually, because the rename command that I was talking about is in the Linux util package. So this is the rename version that comes with util Linux, very, very specifically. Then he continues, he says, but the Perl script called rename that comes out of the box with Debian is by far my favorite for its power, and I've ported it over in my FreeBSD daily driver machine because I use it so much. So that's good to know. So let's just check, let's just look. I'm going to do a which rename, and it tells me that it's in user bin rename. And then just to verify, double verify here, I'm going to do a I'm going to do a less on my Udo Linux package here. And it definitely installed something to user bin rename. So this is definitely the entity in user bin rename. Now, what is that? I'm going to do a file on user bin rename, and it tells me that it is an ELF 64-bit executable. It is a binary file. So if I did a head of user bin rename, I as expected, I get a bunch of incomprehensible, unprintable characters that make no sense to my human eyes. So this is not a Perl script. In other words, this is a binary file, and it was written by, let's look at who this was written by. It was written by, it actually doesn't say who wrote it, so I'd have to look at the source code to find out, and I'm not going to do that right now, but it's Udo Linux package from ftp.kernel.org/pub/linux/utils/Udo Linux. There you go. So that clarifies that. And that's just to be clear, the episodes that we're in right now are still covering Udo Linux. That's the context of any command that I mention until stated otherwise, are those that are included with Udo Linux. And Udo Linux is a package that your Linux distribution will probably have installed. It is a very common thing because it's a bunch of little utilities from the people who developed your kernel. So it tends to get packaged up with a bunch of Linux distributions. Okay, so that asterisk aside, he says, you mentioned the dash S flag, which my rename doesn't have. That's his Perl script, I think. Or that's his is a Perl script. It's not his Perl script. It is a Perl script that came with Debian, apparently. And the dash V flag, but the one I use the most is the dash N flag. This is the dry run option, showing how each file name would be renamed without actually performing the rename. I use this all the time to make sure I'm not totally screwing things up. Additionally, the bash caret search caret replace notation makes it easy to do something like rename dash N, so that's dry run, and then single quote S slash foo slash bar slash close quote foo asterisk dot txt and verify the results, then type $ caret dash N to replace the dash N with nothing and run the command for real. So in other words, he's removing the dash N option of the previous command that he ran. So for instance, if I did an ls-l right now, that gives me a long list of stuff, right? With all the file, the modes and the users and sizes and everything like that. So now if I do a caret dash L, it runs just ls without the dash L. Now you could also do ls dash L, for instance, and then do caret dash L caret, let's do dash M, because that's pretty noticeable. And that runs the previous command, ls, but it swaps the dash L option with the dash M option. You can try this yourself. It's pretty darned handy. I mean, it does take bash. I don't know of any other shell that uses that notation. Zed shell might, because Zed shell re-implements so much that bash has. But as far as I know, it's a bash convention. So that's worth the price of admission right there, I think. I mean, that's this episode done, I think. And then Tim continues, because the expression substitution is just Perl code, and again, he refers me to his asterisk that his rename command is a Perl script. You can use any Perl statement here. While I'm far from a Perl hacker, more a Python guy, two particular bits come to mind. So none of this really applies to anything unless you're on Debian using their rename Perl script. The Perl, quote, y slash space dot dot slash space dot dot slash command act like tr, which is the translate command. Is that translate? Or what does tr stand for? Yeah, translate. The tr mapping command, mapping one set of characters to another. This is great for converting file names to all lowercase. So, for example, rename, and then single quote, y slash capital A through, or dash capital Z slash lowercase a through, dash lowercase z slash single quote space star dot txt. So that would take all of the dot txt files, and anytime it found the capital character A through Z, would then make it lowercase a through Z. You can use capturing groups in the regular expressions and then reference them in the replacement. This is great for slicing and dicing bits of the file name. Now that sounds great. He says, in this example, files are named in the format month-year. So touch curly brace 01.12-curly brace 2018.2019 curly brace dot txt. So then if you do an ls on that, you'd have 01-2018, 11-2018, 09-2018, and so on. But I really would prefer them in a year month format. Rename single quote s slash parentheses backslash d for a digit plus close parentheses dash parentheses backslash d plus close parentheses slash dollar sign curly brace 2 curly brace dash dollar sign curly brace 1 curly brace slash single quote space asterisk dot txt. So that's saying basically to search for a digit separated by a dash and then another digit, and then replace them with the second thing that that Perl found with the first thing that Perl found, and do that for all .txt files. So that's pretty neat. So you can capture bits with the parentheses dot 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 parentheses and then refer back to them as either $1, $2 in the replacement. For another example, if you use the mail merge functionality in AbbeyWord to generate PDFs, they're stupidly named with a numeric suffix. So you can end up with PDFs named output.pdf-0, output.pdf-1. I've seen other applications do this, actually. So I use rename to chop those bits off and move them forward. Rename, single quote, s/.pdf, and then again, parentheses, dash, backwards, backslash, d for a digit plus, so more than one digit, one or more digits, close parentheses, slash, dollar sign, curly brace, one, curly brace, dot pdf, slash, space, output, asterisk, pdf, dash, asterisk. Anyways, thought I'd share in case you found it useful. Yeah, those are super useful tips. Sort of, maybe not exactly, because the Perl script, I mean, you have to have the rename Perl script for that stuff to actually work exactly as he's described, but it's still super useful just given sort of the idea of, oh, this is how to structure replacements in, you know, programmatically. That, I think that sort of thing is always a useful, even if it's just sort of a thought exercise, because a lot of times just kind of thinking about what the problem is and sort of the structure of how to solve it is harder than actually solving it. It's sort of that prep work sometimes that makes it difficult. So it's cool to hear how Tim got around some of these wonky name problems that he had. Okay, so next I want to read a related feedback email from Ronald, and he says, I heard your latest episode featuring rename. How timely. A while back I had to rename some files and move asterisk dot description asterisk dot info didn't work because of obvious reasons. Move doesn't really like wildcards very much. It got me to thinking, why doesn't Bash GNU Linux come with a rename utility with syntax like DOS, OS2, or even move or copy, or rather CP? Really, it's the biggest shortfall of GNU Linux in regards to DOS. Now, of course, this is Plat 2 here. I don't know what DOS or OS2 did for renames, so I have no idea what he's talking about here. But he carries on. Anyway, I decided to write just such a tool in Bash scripting language. Before I carry on, let's get one tip out of the way. You mentioned being unable to sort the results of touch foo curly brace 1 dot dot 10 close curly brace properly. That's solvable with ls-vl. -v is for version numbers. Cool. He is correct. I think I was probably using that as sort of an example, for a quick and easy example. That said, though, I guess that maybe was a poor example because it's obviously very easy to solve. That also said, I never have used that before. I didn't know about that ls-v, ls-v option. That was really not something that I ever thought of. But there it is, natural sort of version numbers within text. You know, I say I've never used it, and that's probably not true. It's probably one of those things that I discovered one day and thought, oh my gosh, this is brilliant, and then I forgot about it. Anyway, he says, now that that's out of the way, allow me to address the issues with the lack of a rename program that works like move or cp or ren with the format command bracket options source target. So first and biggest issue, path name expansion in Bash. If one were to write a program to say rename and run it thusly, so his example rename tool is rin. That's Romeo November, not Romeo Mike. So rin space asterisk dot htm space asterisk dot html in a folder with file dot or file 1 htm, file 2 htm, then path name expansion would mean that your program would receive the following: file 1.htm, file 2.htm, and then space asterisk asterisk dot html. And that depends on the shopped settings for null glob and fail glob, and the set dash f or plus f for disabling or enabling path name expansion. But ignore that for now. However, if your PWD contained file 1.htm, file 2.htm, file 3.html, then your program would receive these parameters: file 1.htm, file 2.htm, file 3.html, at which point, good luck determining the user's intent. So in other words, he's pointing out that a command would not easily know what to rename to what. Are you asking it to rename file 1.htm to file 2.htm? Or are you saying rename both file 1 and file 2 to file 3.html? Or are you just saying, who knows, right? Are you saying file 1 and file 2 should be file 3? Yeah, it would be difficult for the programmer or the program to understand. So this is him again. If the user quotes the parameters, then the wildcard pattern can be processed by the program. Sure. So the task at hand has ballooned into a significant undertaking, especially if it's written to accommodate lack of quotes, because that's going to happen a lot. And that is very true. I mean, how many of us quote everything that we feed a shell? It's just not something that we typically do. So he says, also, quotes are not, wildcards aren't really required for a proper rename command. Rn file 1.htm version 1.html. Completely valid, no wildcards. Okay, so upon hearing your podcast, I jumped to my computer, cloned the GitHub repo I made, and tested your foo question mark and foo question mark examples. Blew right up, so thanks. Seriously though, your examples were totally valid, and I hadn't put much effort into question marks as wildcards, since I was already so deep in the weeds just handling quotes or no quotes, and how to parse what I infer were the user's intentions. It's really, really hard for a hack like me to come up with an efficient and succinct way to handle all replacements of wildcards. They really need to be anchored to A, the beginning of a string, B, a period, or C, the end of a string. Making things even more fun, I find that when I have a file called XXX, and I want to move it to XXX.test, even move bulks at world cards. So his example is ls-l-xxx, and there's the file, and then move x wildcard dot wildcard to asterisk dot asterisk space asterisk dot test, move cannot stat x asterisk dot asterisk, no such file or directory. So that's an interesting response, actually. And then move xxx space asterisk dot yyy, it renames xxx to asterisk dot yyy, not xxx dot yyy. So bash is great and powerful, but also a bit a little bit difficult in some regards. If you're interested, I'm making a branch for dealing with your examples and shall commit it soonish to github.com/ronaldbarnes, that's capital R Ronald Barnes, capital B-A-R-N-E-S, /bash-rename. That's if the entirety of the problems don't turn out to be intractable, which is possible and explains the lack of such a tool in the GNU toolbox. Thanks for your podcast. Love the walkthrough Util Linux. Also interested in any feedback on rename/ren, soon to be renamed RN, to match GNU's move and CP. So this is something I haven't had a chance to look at yet. Super intriguing, though. And I'm going to take a look at it very soon, possibly give feedback, possibly not. I'm really eager to see how he attempts to solve all these problems in Bash. That idea, honestly, is quite intriguing in itself. I've written a Bash, a command in Bash before. I consider a serious tool. It's called Trashy. If you have not tried it, you should. If you have not installed it, you should. It is a command line trash can. You can find it at gitlab.com/trashy, I think. Yeah, gitlab.com/trashy. There you go. And it's written in Bash. So are there bugs? Yeah, there are still bugs. Is it, has it been really enlightening? Yeah, it's been really enlightening. There are some things that shell expansion just makes really interesting. So yeah, you should try that out. And also try out Ronald's rename command. I think that would be a really interesting thing to look at, especially if you're kind of poking around with Bash stuff and want a few things to bug test and to stress test. That's about all the listener feedback that I have that would be of general interest. There are a couple more emails from a couple of people, one of whom I met in person at All Things Open. So, Blizzak, I've got your email. I'm not ignoring you. Well, I am ignoring you, but not in a mean way. Also, Chris, I've got your email, and I'm not ignoring you in a mean way. I'm just ignoring you until I get a chance to sit down and answer your questions. So I think that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Podcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network, usually in channels such as Obcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @klaatu@mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, GNUWorldOrder.info and SlackerMedia.info. I will see you next time.
I thought that this money in Cape was an IBM machine, and I didn't want to be caught shocking at any constant when lid comes off.